At Smashville, good morning, and thank you for joining us. It is Morning Drive, off and running, hour number two here on this Tuesday. Nick Braden, D-Mace, and Chase, good to have you in. Coming up in about 15 minutes, Reese Davis with some very strong commentary. But let's get to a little college football. And you guys know my affinity for Jeremy Pruitt. And I just want to throw this question out to you guys, to the audience, 615-737-1025. I saw Laura Rutledge put out a very simple tweet Saturday. Jeremy Pruitt, SEC Coach of the Year. Now, I'm not going to go that far, but I want to see what you guys think about this scenario. Let's say the Vols win out. Jeremy Pruitt finishes the year on a four-game win streak. They get 7 wins in the regular season, 4 wins in the SEC. Kentucky, we talked about it. The balloon has been deflated. Maybe they continue to drip oil down the stretch.
They should be heavy favorites.
You think so?
Well, they play what, Middle Tennessee and Louisville?
Okay.
They should be heavy favorites to go 9-3.
Okay.
Exactly.
They get to 9 wins.
Which is an astonishingly good year for
Kentucky
football.
Yes, very much so. LSU, 8-2 on the year. Let's just say Pruitt wins out. Does he have a chance to win SEC Coach of the Year?
Oh, 100%. Absolutely. At 7-5, I think you go from 0-8 in the league to 7-5, I think you'd absolutely be head-to-head right in the mix. And that's what makes it a fascinating discussion, because you're probably going head-to-head with Mark Stoops. And you stomped Mark Stoops head-to-head. Mm-hmm. But 5-3 in the league for Kentucky, the first time since 1977 they had a winning record in the league. They finished second in the East for the first time, I think, maybe ever. It's arguably the best season in Kentucky football. For them to go 9-3 would be arguably the best season for Kentucky football in 3 or 4 decades. And that is, I mean, they had some good teams with Andre Woodson. They had some good teams with Tim Couch, but they never had a 5-3 record in the conference. And so I think Stoops is going to be hard to beat. Coach O, I think if they finish 10-2, will also be in that conversation, because so many people doubted him, myself included.
I said he'd be fired in November.
But Pruitt at 7-5 would be quite an accomplishment. I could see it being a fairly split vote between those three guys. I can't think of – I mean, what's weird is that Saban and Smart have both done such a great job coaching, and they're just not even going to be in consideration for the job. So I don't think – I mean, yeah, you're not putting Fisher in there. You're not putting anybody else – in that, Barry Odom has quietly done a pretty good job with Missouri, but I don't. I think it comes down to Pruitt. I think he has to win both games, though.
Doesn't it come down to what your expectation was, or what the consensus opinion was back in August?
I mean, yes, but then, you know, they played a tough game against what was it, Charlotte, that they barely won.
Yeah,
you know, they had other games where. You know, you thought they should win, and they end up not winning. So, it will be a close, race at who wins Coach of the Year. To me, if LSU continues to win out, I think because of the division he's in, Coach O would have to be the front runner. He's taken a team that people thought were going to finish, you know, fourth in the West.
I had them even lower than that.
Yeah, fourth in the West, and they're second best team, maybe the third best team in the SEC. Period.
Yeah.
So I think he would be the front runner. I like what Barry Odom is doing at Missouri. They could end up at
8-4.
In overall, 4-4 in the conference. So Pruitt is up there, but like Braden said, he has to win both of the games. He has to win the next two remaining games in order to be seriously considered, you know, a coach of the year.
I think gun to my head is probably going to go to Kentucky and Stoops.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to use this premise and this basis off of preseason over-under win total, according to Vegas. I mean, the Vols were roughly around 5.5. So if they finish at 7, they were a win and a half above expectation. Mm-hmm. Kentucky was probably right in that same vicinity of 5.5. They're going to get to 9. So I would think Kentucky's got
to do this, though.
Probably 7-ish.
Yeah, they're probably picked to go 7-5. Either way, and this is all based on the assumption that all three teams go 2-0 down the stretch. Mm-hmm. Now LSU has Kentucky, as I mentioned, I think has the easiest path. They play Middle Tennessee, well, they'll be a heavy favorite, and Louisville has fired its football. But, oh, by the way, Bobby Petrino's unemployed.
I think Syracuse actually just scored another touchdown 2 minutes ago.
I mean, I think they had 17 or 18 penalties. Like, I think I. I think Jared Stillman's head exploded more than one time, if that's even possible, on Saturday, because they are inventing new ways to get trounced in conference play. So Louisville fires its coach. I can't imagine Kentucky in a rivalry spot with one of their best teams on a senior sort of moment for all those players is going to lay an egg against an awful, awful Louisville team. And they're just better than middle. So they should go 9-3. A Kentucky going 9-3 is going to be hard to beat from a coach of the year standpoint, because it's never the guy who coached the best team. It's always the guy who did the most unexpectedly good job. And but the point of this conversation should not be for Tennessee fans. And they probably finished 6-6. I think Missouri's pretty good. I think they're a tough. I think that's going to be a tough beat for Tennessee, or a tough game for Tennessee to win. If Tennessee goes 6-6, Jeremy Pruitt will have done an exceptional job. We can say that Jeremy Pruitt's done a really good job, and he doesn't win Coach of the Year. It's okay. The Coach of the Year award itself, fans just need to not get worked up over that stuff. Like, all that really matters is your coach did a good job. That's what really that's what really matters. It's not about, like, oh, Mark Stoops was voted on by a bunch of writers as doing a better job, but we beat him head-to-head. Like, who cares? Who cares? Your coach did a very good job this year, a better-than-expected job this year, and you're in a bowl game getting 20 extra practice days for all those young players, a check from a bowl game, and a potential trip to Shreveport, Louisiana. I don't know about Shreveport. They might come here, though. I mean, they could be here. And a bowl game in Nashville is a great reward. There are going to be tons of fans there. So I think that it's probably unlikely that they get that bid. I think the Music City Bowl will take somebody higher than them. But either way, it's considered a successful season. And that's all that matters. It doesn't matter who actually, you know, what a bunch of media guys like us vote on who's going to be Coach of the Year. It's not that important. What matters is your coach did a good job.
All right, let's take a listen. Here is Jeremy Pruitt, the head coach of your Tennessee Volunteers, yesterday on the Paul Feinbaum Show, talking about the success of year one.
Well, you should improve every week. And, you know, we've really had good weeks of practice. I think our guys have tried to create the right practice habits. And we really improved it. Sometimes it hadn't showed on Saturdays because probably lack of execution. But I felt like Saturday that our guys played hard. Even though things didn't always go our way, I felt like they tried to find a way and stayed positive and competed hard. And I was proud to see them do that.
That was Pruitt yesterday on the Paul Feinbaum Show. And you mentioned it, you know, it's probably a long shot that they get to the Music City Bowl. But if they did, you would actually have the Vols playing two straight football games in the city of Nashville because they wrap up the season at Vanderbilt.
Yeah, and I do think a lot, well, as I had a bunch of Tennessee people texting me yesterday about, you know, tailgating, are we bringing our kids to that game, that kind of stuff. They are so, like, if they were to lose to Vanderbilt, I feel like all the goodwill Jeremy Pruitt has built up could disappear instantly. And Vanderbilt's a good team. I mean, that's a dangerous team. Vanderbilt's been in every game they've played for the most part. So it's going to be a battle. If 2-5-6 teams potentially doing battle for bowl eligibility could be a pretty epic way to finish the season for both teams. Although Vanderbilt, I believe, they would have to beat Ole Miss this weekend at home, which is very doable. And Tennessee would then lose to Missouri, and it would set up a, you know, Tennessee would win to go to a bowl game. Vanderbilt, due to the APR, would probably still get into a bowl game either way at 5-7. But man, it will create, and the fans are already just jacked up for it. They're just like, God, we got to beat Vanderbilt. We got to beat Vanderbilt. We can't lose to Vanderbilt again. And
Vanderbilt's played a lot of good teams tough.
They have played.
That's not an easy win.
And Missouri's the same way. Like, Missouri should have beaten Kentucky. Should have beaten so-and-so, should have beaten so-and-so, should have beaten so-and-so. I mean, they played a really that 0-4 stretch for Missouri to start the season was no joke, and now they're a reason they're favored by a touchdown, right, or a little bit less than that in Neyland Stadium.
Yeah.
They got a quarterback who can sling it. That's what Kentucky can't do. You can stack the box when you're Pruitt and try to just stop Benny Snell, and Tennessee's defense the last 2 weeks has been great. Drew Locke is a totally different test and a totally different animal for them in that style of things. So and so is, frankly, Kyle Shurmur. So it's going to be it's no easy feat to win two games or even one over the last two. So again, I'm waiting to reserve judgment on this season based on the last month of the season. So far he's 1-1, and I'm not counting Charlotte. I'm counting South Carolina and Kentucky. He's 1-1. If he can get one more, it will be considered a success in my mind.
All right, coming up next, Reese Davis, who we've had on the show, host of ESPN's College Game Day, basically obliterated the concept of automatic bids for the college football playoff when it comes to expansion. This is phenomenal. You'll hear this on the other side, and we'll react to it. That's coming up next on Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. We're going to get back to the Titans coming up at the top of the hour. Brian Baldinger, NFL Network, who's been pretty much featuring all of his Baldy breakdowns over the last 2 days on that Titans beatdown of the Patriots. He's going to join us.
Is he chewing gum?
Why not?
He's chewing gum.
Can we have him chew gum on the air with
us? He's got his clicker. You talk about a film junkie.
Deion
all that
Lewis
guy does.
He takes it outside here, hits the egg gap.
Now watch this Taylor Lewan kid, Nick. Big road grader, fifth year out of Michigan. That's what you want in a left tackle.
So one of the big stories coming out, we didn't cover a lot of college football, obviously, yesterday with all of the Titans talk, but one of the big stories coming out of the weekend is we are probably going to have one of the worst conference championship weekends we've ever had. Northwestern, congratulations. Northwestern clinched the Big Ten West division. Pittsburgh is now one win away from facing Clemson in the ACC championship game. I'm assuming that's a 24-25 point spread somewhere in there. Mm-hmm. Northwestern against either Ohio State or Michigan is probably going to be a 15-16-17 point underdog. Utah or Arizona State or Arizona, those three teams have like a combined 11 losses, are in the mix for the Pac-12 South, probably going to be Utah or Arizona State, teams that have three or four losses each. Iowa State's got three losses. They're still in the mix for the Big 12 title game. And I'm looking around at college football, and I'm going, if we lived in an automatic bid situation, in a world where automatic bids were a thing, like the NFL, and so many college football fans still want automatic bids. Oh, you win your conference championship, you get into the playoff, which makes absolutely no sense to me. So I had Reese Davis on. I was doing some SiriusXM stuff yesterday, and I had Reese Davis on yesterday. And I was talking about this, how Northwestern is 60 minutes away from, if they pull an upset, they would be in the playoff and not Michigan. That if Pittsburgh wins one game, just one game, a team that has five losses could be in the playoff and not Clemson. That if Utah beats Washington State, they could be in the playoff. We could have great football teams left out of the playoff because of one game and an automatic bid. So I asked Reese Davis the question, basically, would you be okay with in a world where automatic bids got you into the playoff? And this is what he had to say.
Oh, I would hate that. I've hated it from the beginning. I hate the idea of people saying automatic bids. I hate the idea. I don't know if I'm being clear enough about this, but I'm not. And the only way I will ever come around on automatic bids in this supposed expanded playoff, you know, 6, 8, 10 years down the line, whenever it happens, the only way I'll come around is if you get rid of conference championship games. You have to, because then you can have a true measure of a champion. Because, see, I don't want to root for or against any team, but almost to quiet two things, to quiet the people who talk about, hey, win their conference, automatic bids, you know, I want Herm to win the Pac-12. I want Northwestern to win the Big Ten, you know, and Pittsburgh to win the ACC, just to show that doesn't matter. If you do the one game thing, anybody can lose. Bob Knight used to say to me all the time when I did games with him, dumb loses more than smart wins. And you can lose. There aren't many teams that can beat Alabama and Clemson, for instance, but they can lose. You know, anybody can screw up a game and lose. That, and I also want to eliminate from the lexicon, they didn't even win their division. You're going to tell me it's easier to win is it easier to come in second in the Big Ten East or to win the ACC Coastal? Which one? Everybody knows the answer to that. So that silliness, Ohio State didn't win their division, Alabama didn't win their division, is ridiculous. Other than that, I don't really have an opinion on it.
First of all, I've never heard Reese Davis go into like troll voice. Like, he's trolling.
He had a take.
He's passionate about that. I did not expect him to answer that. I've talked to him a lot, and that's, I've never heard him like that. But I couldn't agree with him more. And this is a year of a perfect example of why we need to be really careful with automatic bids into the playoff, because the playoff will probably expand. But we got to be careful, because you're the Vegas guy, Nick, and here's the question I want to ask the audience and everybody here, male guy McCabe, Constable, T Mason, Nick. What I want to know, honestly, because if we expand the playoff and we add automatic bids, sure, we're gonna bring in more teams. Right now, Iowa State and Texas would be in the mix. Northwestern, Pittsburgh, Utah, Arizona State, they'd all still be in the mix for the playoff. And right now, the way we have it, we only have 9 teams left really for the playoff. Right, it's Michigan, Ohio State, Alabama, Georgia, Clemson, Notre Dame, Washington State, West Virginia. Those are the only teams. So if we open it up to automatic bids, we're going to bring in a few more teams. And that's a good thing for the game. But we also bring in the risk of really garbage teams making the playoff. Which one of those worlds do we want to live in? And my vote, along with Reese Davis, very clearly, is I don't want to risk a 6-6 Northwestern team or a 7-5 Pittsburgh team knocking out a great football team who deserves a chance to play in the playoff because they won one game. I don't want to live in that world. I'm okay listening to other people's opinions on this, but I don't want to live in that world.
I'm fine with four teams. If they go to expansion, I can live with it if it's six or if it's eight. But I want the six or eight best teams. I don't want to expand and go to automatic qualifiers because you can't convince me that a four or five loss Northwestern team, despite winning the Big Ten, is one of the six or eight best teams in college football.
Well, it will end up being like college basketball. And you see it year in and year out, where sometimes the best team doesn't necessarily. I think it happened to happened to TSU a few years ago.
Let's talk
they
Belmont.
Were clearly the best team in their conference. They end up losing in the second round to Austin Peay, who was the worst team. Austin Peay ends up getting it in because they win the tournament.
You nailed it.
It shouldn't always be automatic bids. You know, when it's clearly a team just went on a run and they're the worst team or okay team, then you got to throw the automatic bid thing out the window. I don't want to see an automatic bid either.
I'm so glad you brought up the basketball thing because let's just sit down and ask Rick Bird about what he thinks. When his team goes 30-3 in a regular season, and they are clearly the best team in the OVC, not even close. They are the best team over the course of the whole season. They earn the right to be the best team in that league. They won the league championship. And because they had a bad shooting night in round two of the OVC tournament, somebody knocked them off. They don't get to go to the tournament. That is essentially what we're talking about here. Now, in college basketball, we love that championship week, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's so dramatic and it's great television and all this stuff. But how do you think Rick Bird feels about it? He would go back to the other direction.
Oh, yeah.
And you'd say he would want the regular season champion to get the automatic bid. And I agree with Reese. If we ever do have automatic bids, we need to do away with championship games and do away with divisions so that we truly know who the best team in the conference is. But as long as we've got the current structure where teams like Northwestern and Pittsburgh and Utah, and I'm not trying to be disrespectful to those teams, but you cannot convince me they are amongst the best teams in the country and deserve competing for a national championship. It just isn't right. And this goes back to our conversation about the NFL. If every schedule is about the same, I'm okay with your record clinching a division and getting into the playoffs, right? I'm okay with that because everybody's schedule is the same.
But you're okay with 7-9 getting in?
It's fine. In the NFL, everybody's schedule is about the same. It's unfortunate that sometimes a better team might get left out, but you know the deal in the NFL when you get into it, right? It's everybody's schedule, 16 games. They all play the exact same schedule, basically. In college football, it's not even close. Nobody plays the same schedule. It's logistically impossible. So what we need is subjectivity, and we need the committee, and people already want to complain about the committee. We were complaining about the computers and the lack of the human element. Yeah. Now we're complaining about the human element.
Mm-hmm.
Guys, the committee has done a great job in 4 years giving us great teams into the playoffs.
They've given us drama, which we love.
How many teams that got into the playoff shouldn't have gotten into the playoff? In 4 years out of 16.
I can't recall one.
Yeah, I can't recall one team that got in that shouldn't have got in.
There's maybe one, and I don't want to mention it because I don't want to upset my co-host.
Sparty.
Michigan State beat Ohio State that year, but Ohio State was clearly the better team.
Mm-hmm.
That was the Zeke Elliott team with Joey Bosa, and they ended up winning
the Big Ten Championship that year.
Yeah.
So
they lost to Bama.
Yeah.
So
ended up getting trounced by Bama.
But were they one of the four best at the time? You could argue Ohio State, but there's certainly a great case for Michigan State to have gotten in. The point is did anybody get screwed out of not making the playoff? And nobody has yet. And shut up, Ohio State fans, about last year. You don't give up 55 points to Iowa.
Yeah.
But the committee's going to have some tough decisions this year, and I don't want Pittsburgh. Like, I don't want to live in a world where Pittsburgh could win its way into the playoff by playing one good football game.
Well, I mean,
I don't want to live in that
just
world.
Just imagine if Pittsburgh or Northwestern was the opening round playoff game against Alabama.
If it was like a one versus eight.
Oh, man.
Alabama on a neutral field against Northwestern is going to be almost a 30-point favorite.
Yeah.
You want to see that in a playoff?
It would ruin it just what you're doing is when you make it automatic bids, what you're doing is you are completely devaluing the entirety of the regular season then. Because what you're saying is oh, you can go 6-6, but as long as you win that one game, you get in. Just like the basketball analogy.
Yeah.
You can go 14-16 in the OVC and still get into the NCAA tournament. And that's not what
everybody gets in, basically.
That's not what I want from college football. That's not what I want. It may be what you want, and that's okay. It's just not what I want.
Don't water down the product. That, to me, if you're in the playoffs and we're expanding, you're watering it down. I mean, think about that. A 7-4 conference champion in the playoff being a 4-touchdown underdog.
I think the argument there is it better for college football to have a few more teams in the race in November, or at the risk of having really awful playoff games? That's the equation. And I understand people that want to say, "Hey, but I want to have a chance in November. I want to have a chance." And I get why people argue that way.
Mm-hmm.
But what's best for the game, in my opinion, is putting the best teams into the playoff because they've earned it over a 12-game season. Mm-hmm. Not Northwestern lost to Akron.
Mm-hmm.
Don't
sleep on the
you
Zips.
You don't get to lose to Akron and then compete for a national title. I'm sorry. That's not the way it should be.
Is Terry Bowden still the coach?
Who cares? Have another burrito, Terry.
Yes. All right, let's get some phone calls on this. People want to weigh in on the college football talk. 615-737-1025. We'll come back. We'll get your calls. If you're on hold, hang tight. That's coming up next here on Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Good stuff last segment on the college football expansion with automatic bids.
Fired up.
Let's get your phone calls. 615-737-1025. Handful of people want to weigh in on the discussion, and we go to Kevin in Nashville, who's up next on Morning Drive. Kevin, good morning. How are you?
Hey, good, guys. Hey, I just wanted to bring up just the fact of all this talk about the automatic bid stuff that I would just like it to be decided on the field. If we keep going the way we're going, Alabama gets in every year with no matter if they win or lose or not. If they lost two games and you guys say, hey, neutral field, who wins? Alabama's still going to get that vote, and I just want to be decided on the field, not with guys in a conference room. So.
Well, it's a good point, Kevin, but here's the thing. We have not ever had that situation yet where a two-loss team got in.
Mm-hmm. It would be hard to put a two-loss team in.
Yeah, I don't think you'd put Alabama in. This is what Reese was so fired up about. Oh, he didn't even win his division. Don't give me that crap. I'm with Reese on this. Just because you didn't win your division doesn't make you one of the four best teams. And just because, like, the win it on the field guy, and I'm not picking on you, Kevin, in particular here, but that is – oh, let's win it on the field, guy. Mm-hmm. Well, what happens to the first 12 games of the season then? Why don't they count too? Because mm-hmm. what we're doing with automatic bids is we are essentially eliminating the first 12 games of the season as part of the evaluation process.
Mm-hmm.
And we're just saying, all right, Northwestern versus Michigan. Oh, not to mention the fact that Michigan already beat Northwestern head-to-head. Forget that part of the equation. It's a rematch. But we put them in there, and we go, well, it doesn't matter that Michigan dominated 12 teams and went 12-0, and then Northwestern lost to Akron and went 6-6. That's not winning it on the field, too?
But isn't that the beauty of college football, that even with a 4-team playoff, the regular season is still, by and large, a week-to-week playoff?
Yeah,
I mean, you have listen a little to bit Nick
more,
talk.
You have more wiggle room now than you did before, but you still, like, you can lose a game and still get back in.
But barely. I mean,
well,
we've only had three undefeated teams make the playoff out of 16. Right. Think about that. Everybody's lost a game.
Well, I mean, at the beginning, you would rather lose, what is it? You would rather lose early than late. Because at least, like Michigan's loss
Notre Dame
won't count against them, I believe, unless Notre Dame, unless they go undefeated. And, you know, Oklahoma wins the Big 12. And, you know, Clemson and Alabama continues to win. Then that loss early in the season at Notre Dame means something. But if Notre Dame loses and, say, Oklahoma loses a game but still gets in the Big 12 championship and wins, well, Michigan's in. As long as they win the Big 10 championship and beat Ohio State, they're in. Well, they got to beat Ohio State to get the Big 10 championship.
Right.
But as long as they win the Big 10 championship, they're in. So, you know.
But the timing of the loss, I will just look at last year. I mean, Alabama lost in the last week of the regular season.
Well, that's Alabama. It's
Georgia,
like, and they played the second best team in the country.
Yeah, and Georgia lost in November and got in as well. I mean, Clemson lost to Pittsburgh in November and got in. It's not as much about when you lose anymore, which I think is a good thing. The committee has eliminated the time of your loss as being a factor. Like, because if Notre Dame loses to Syracuse, there's still a really interesting debate between Michigan and Notre Dame.
But
because Notre Dame beat them head-to-head.
I think it's an effect this year. With Michigan particularly, because Michigan lost early, but if you've watched Michigan since that loss, they are clearly a much it's been a 180, and they clearly have the best defense in all of college football.
They look good right now.
Well, yeah, and they weren't, and let's be clear, they weren't that bad. They lost by 7 to Notre Dame on the road. They didn't even play that poorly in the second half. They got it was a slow first half, but like in the second half of that game, they were playing good football. So I think the timing of your loss is less critical, which is a good thing. It shouldn't matter when
you
lose.
But is it less critical for everybody or less critical for a team like Alabama? Because, yeah, you lost to Auburn last year, but if the whole point of the playoff is the four best teams, even a Bama loss on Thanksgiving with one loss, we're going to sit there and say,
no,
well,
your timing,
Bama's still one of the four best teams.
Timing does – I'm serious. I think the fact that we've eliminated when you lost from the equation is a great thing because – again, Clemson got in after losing to Pittsburgh in November. Alabama got in losing on the last weekend. Georgia got in after losing to Auburn in November. Mm-hmm. We've seen teams lose late and get in. It should not matter when you lose. What matter? This is the beauty of the committee, is the committee steps back from all of that, and they look at your entire season, and they go, all right, who are the four best teams? And that's their job. And decide, quote the phrase, deciding it on the field, that's what happens every single Saturday.
But I think the difference,
it's not just one championship game. It's the whole season.
Do you think it's a little different considering Clemson and Georgia last year had losses in November but rebounded to win their conference championship in December, whereas you look at Bama, and specifically the Bama hater out there is going to say, you lost in November. It was your last game of the season. You didn't even win your own division. Auburn went to the SEC title game. I don't want to see you in the playoff, but the reality is, even though they lost by 12 points, they're still one of the four best teams in football.
They were clearly one of the top four teams in the country.
That's my point.
They played a top four or five team in the country in Auburn, and they end up losing. Okay, so it's not like they were playing Auburn, who was ranked 25.
Yeah, they were top
five.
And it was
team.
On the road.
Exactly. Yeah, so they lost a game that historically is a tough game. But losing to Auburn doesn't nullify
the other
that they
games?
Are they are clearly a top four team in the country, meaning Alabama.
And it's funny because I will actually agree with the Alabama hater that says, well, it was easier for them to get in because they didn't play in the championship game. That's true. It would have eliminated one of the two, either Georgia or Alabama. Mm-hmm. But let's go through this hypothetical. If Alabama goes 12-0 into Atlanta and they lose on a field goal or a touchdown to Georgia, Georgia wins, they go 12-1, Georgia's in. But a 12-1 Alabama, how can you objectively have watched football this year and not think that Alabama at 12-1 with their only loss being in the SEC championship game to another team making the playoff, how can you objectively say that's not one of the four best teams?
Okay, but well, here's
it's
your
impossible.
Dilemma. I'm going to put this on
you. You put in a straitjacket for that.
I'm going to put this on your lap because you're a Michigan guy. You like Harbaugh. So Clemson goes undefeated.
I'm wearing a Wisconsin shirt. I want the record to show.
Yes, you're representing the Big Ten West this morning. So
this
Clemson.
Ford and Brood in Wisconsin.
Clemson goes undefeated. Notre Dame goes undefeated. They're in. Bama loses to Georgia. Georgia has one loss. Georgia is in. So you got Georgia, Clemson, and Notre Dame. It comes down to Bama losing to Georgia with one loss, Michigan winning the Big Ten with one loss. Who are you putting in?
I think Notre Dame is more in that conversation than you think.
Even as an undefeated team?
Because they have a worse resume.
Okay.
But yes, the 0 and the 1 don't really mean much anymore to people on the committee. That's a good thing, that just because you went 12-0 and somebody else went 11-1 that you're automatically better. We've eliminated that from college football, which is a good thing. I think Alabama would be the 3 seed at that point. And the debate then becomes, and I think this is what, as a radio host, I'm rooting for, Michigan at 12-1 and Notre Dame at 12-0 for one spot, because Notre Dame will have the better record and the head-to-head win without its starting quarterback, but everybody and their mother thinks Michigan's better. Vegas thinks Michigan's better. We all would pick Michigan head-to-head. We think Michigan's playing better football right now. We all think Michigan's better. It would be the most controversial decision the committee will have
to
make.
I'm telling you
in
right now that if that scenario does happen, that every member of that board would be fired for leaving Notre Dame out. Yeah, if they leave Notre Dame out,
let's just come to the conclusion.
Everybody would
get fired. There's no chance an undefeated Notre Dame is left out.
I can't see Notre Dame being left out.
And if that's the case,
I think it would be unfair. Honestly, I think it would be unfair.
What if they're not? What if you don't believe? Let's make it a committee of us three. We're the committee now.
Okay.
Do you believe Notre Dame is one of the four best teams at that case?
No.
Forget the resume, forget the record. Do you believe they're one of the four best teams?
You put Notre Dame
football?
And Michigan on the same field, Michigan wins.
This is not even about the same field. because I think if you play, I don't know, if you play 10 times, Michigan wins 6, Notre Dame wins 4.
I would probably go with that.
And that's not a, it's not like Michigan's winning 8 and Notre Dame's winning 2.
Alabama would win 10 out of 10 against Notre Dame.
And I think Alabama would win 8 out of 10 versus Michigan. To me, you're absolutely right that right now as we sit, Michigan has shown they are the better team. If you just look at the resumes, if you look at both team, the eye test, who's playing better?
Right.
Michigan's playing better. But it would still be hard again, knowing the head to head.
I know.
And Notre Dame's 12-0.
Better record.
And Michigan's lost the game, but they've won the Big Ten Championship. I can't leave a 12-0 Notre Dame out. I just couldn't.
Why is that? Because of their brand?
No, it has nothing to do with the brand.
I know it's not their brand. But they're 12-0.
Because Michigan's just
Brand. Exactly. This has nothing to do with brands, but they're 12-0.
No, this goes back to, and I agree with you, because I would put Michigan in if I was on the committee, right? If we're the jury and the three of us are sitting here, if this situation plays out, again, the story is Clemson wins out, goes undefeated, they're the one seed. Georgia beats Alabama in the championship game. They're the 2 seed. Alabama is 12-1. They lose. They are probably the 3 seed because everyone and their mother is going to look at Notre Dame and Alabama and go, Alabama.
Of course.
Because everybody agrees with that. So let's go Alabama 3, which makes it Notre Dame and Michigan. We sit in this room and we go, we think Michigan's the better football team. That means I would vote Michigan at number 4. Mm-hmm. But there is no committee on the planet that is going to look at one team that has a better record and a head-to-head win.
Yeah.
And then vote them out. And if they did, it would be the most controversial decision the committee has ever made.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I'm with you. I don't think they would do it. I think they would put Notre Dame in. But is that the 4 best teams? And that's where we get to the subjectivity. And this is where head-to-head – because I got roasted, Nick. Remember, I said Georgia was the better team even after losing to LSU. I still thought Georgia was the better team.
Mm-hmm.
I feel a little vindicated that Georgia's the better team.
I think
should we do like basketball, a play-in game?
No. God, no.
What about like just an overtime? Just Michigan gets the ball at the 25, Notre Dame gets the ball at the 25. No, I think the committee would put Notre Dame in, and a 12-1 Michigan with the best defense in America left out of the playoff would be – would set fires.
How about hair would explode?
Jim Delaney's office would burn to the ground.
615-737-1025. We're going to get your phone calls on the other side on this, so if you're on hold, hang tight. Want to get people's thoughts on this college football playoff discussion. That's coming up next. Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 again.
Good morning, Nashville. I'm Chase McCabe. The Predators continued their road trip Monday night in Anaheim against the Ducks. Ryan Getzlaff would give the Ducks a 1-0 lead in the second period, but in the third, Kevin Fiala would even the score. It would stay tied through overtime and require a shootout.
Kevin Fiala will have the opportunity here. 2 of 10 in his NHL career in the shootout. Fiala comes on, moves wide left. Cuts back to the inside, and Gibson made the stop, and the Ducks will win this game in the shootout by a 2-1 count.
That's the great Pete Weber on the Fifth Third Bank Nashville Predators Radio Network, as heard here on 102.5 The Game. The Preds do fall 2-1 in the shootout, but gain a point in the standings. They'll have a quick turnaround as they take on the San Jose Sharks tonight with pregame at 8:30, the puck drop at 9:30, right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Titans head coach Mike Vrabel held his weekly press conference after the 34-10 win over the Patriots on Sunday. One of the big topics was not getting overconfident and how they dealt with a 3-game losing streak after starting off 3-1.
I don't know if we can figure that out, but I think that we're trying to prepare. We came in and got started early in the week last week, right as soon as we could on Wednesday, and worked our way throughout the week. And again, I felt like we were preparing well at the end of the week. I felt like our best practices were at the end of the week last week.
They'll take on the Colts this Sunday on Monday Night Football. The Giants beat the 49ers 27-23. I'm Chase McCabe with the Game Center Update. Morning Drive starts now.
Have you missed any interviews or segments from our shows? Visit the audio on demand page at thegamenashville.com. We are Nashville's best sports talk. ESPN 102.5 The Game.
And Smashville, good morning and thank you for joining us. It is Morning Drive off and running on this Tuesday, ESPN 102.5 the game. A lot to get to this morning, including the Preds, the Titans, college football. But I think it would only be fitting if we kicked off the show this morning with kind of some of the stuff that goes on around the station, behind the scenes, pre-show. So this morning, I'm setting up my laptop here in the studio, getting prepared. About 45 minutes ago, Chase McCabe comes in, hands out some mail. He's got a couple of envelopes. And he says, you know, at times I feel like a mailman here at the radio station. And I was just looking at him, and he's got like a blue station pullover, which is very sporty. I'd probably wear it playing golf if it was a little chilly, a little windy, a little rainy.
You'd wear it if you had one.
Yes, I would. And he's got the gray dress pants on this morning. And I'm like, I'll be damned. He looks like a United States postal worker.
He does deliver all of the hot takes every morning from 6 until 10 a.m. Every single morning on 102.5 The Game.
Like, I'm wondering, should we reevaluate our designation of constable?
So, I've done some research. I didn't know much about the Postal Service hierarchy, but I did some research on this.
I'm glad you made good use of the 5 minutes.
No. I already knew all about the fact that the Predators went 0-7 on the power play. All right, settle down back there. Postmaster General is the chief executive officer of the post office. The chief postal inspector is number two, and I don't think I want to put you in charge of the entire postal service, but I think I'm comfortable with you being number two in charge.
It's okay. Nobody else wants to put me in charge either.
So the chief postal inspector is now your second title after the constable.
And we've seen the constable go postal. This works well, and now you could deliver your citations directly via the mail because you work for the postal office.
Now, do I go horseback or do I have a little truck?
Oh, I think you should be the guy walking with like the little satchel.
Nobody walks with the satchel anymore.
I see people walking with satchels.
Do you?
Yeah,
I've noticed that. You don't even wear a man purse anymore.
I got my book bag.
Yeah, but it's not as
it's back
feminine
to school
looking.
Yeah, I don't see it. Even when I'm in the city, when I'm not city, meaning Nashville, I go to other cities. I don't see, they have those push things now.
Mm-hmm.
I don't.
That's true.
Hold on.
If you
see somebody with a satchel, they getting gypped. They need to reevaluate their situation because they're gonna have a bad back.
Well, what I
workman
see,
comp, they might end up getting that earlier than what they should.
So in my neighborhood, there's a bunch of streets that have a lot of street parking. So there's a lot of cars there on the streets. Mm-hmm. So you can't get the truck to all the mailboxes, uh-huh, right? So what they do is they park the truck on one
I'd
block,
be pissed.
And then they take a satchel and they hit all
I'd be mad. Oh, I scrape up everybody's car as I'm walking through. Everybody.
That would be a bit of an overreaction.
No, it wouldn't,
like,
because you know I got to deliver. Oh, or better
yeah, but
yet.
No, there's no other place to park the car.
Better yet, I just wouldn't deliver your mail. I just say, hey, listen, I couldn't get through.
I believe
all these crazos decided to park their car right there where I couldn't get through.
I believe that's a felony.
I would just flick it like a newspaper kid.
Absolutely.
But here's the thing. There's no other place to park their car. So these guys aren't being like jerks by parking their car on the street. There's literally no other place to park.
So that's crazy. That's when the city needs to reevaluate themselves too. Because I have gone down some streets where
you've been to
the street
east side,
is so narrow that it's really only 2.5 car. If they have two cars parked on both sides, you better hope that the person, you know, that's parked next across from the other person, park back, mm-hmm, so you can kind of weave through. If they park right next to them, you're not getting.
So there's one block that I have to go through every single day, two times a day, to go in and to go out to get to my house. There's one block over on like Greenwood Avenue in East Nashville, and it's just one, mm-hmm, where they're parked on both sides of the street. And we have to, like, you play that game where, uh-huh, like, you see the other car coming, and he's on the other side coming this direction, and I'm on this side, and you're both kind of looking at each other like, is it your turn? Are you going to go? All right, I'll pull over.
The telepathy thing going on? You're about 100 yards away. Okay, you can go.
I give a little pull to the right, just pull over a little bit to the right, and all of a sudden that's the signal for the other guy to come on through, and he comes on through. But it is every single, I mean, there's one spot, and it's maybe like 5 or 6 car lengths. Uh-huh. But there's one spot where they have no other place to park, and I'm just like, okay. And it's just, you just kind of get used to it. You just drive slowly, which frankly, as I'm turning into the old man now, on, because I've got two little kids and everything. Like, my wife and I have already joked about buying the little plastic van that we put in the front yard, like by the, you know, I'm talking about the little plastic guy that you put. It says drive like your slow. Drive like it's your kids.
That little van is sitting
slow down.
He got the flag on it. Yes.
And I've already looked. I'm like, I'm on Amazon. I'm like, how much are those little guys cost? Because I've turned into the old grumpy guy, so now I don't mind going a little slowly in the neighborhood to, you know, to allow other cars to pass. And on to the Preds.
So real quickly, though, it's up to you, Chase. If you want to put up a poll question, should we go with Constable Chase, keep that, you know, intact, or do we go Mailman McCabe?
Well, here's the thing.
I think the Constable is perpetuity.
But Derek can attest to this. Mm-hmm. This would not be my first reign as mailman because
absolutely.
On 3D, I had a segment called McCabe's Mailbag.
It's true.
So he does. He has experience. That's why.
So the resume's been updated.
He has the experience. You know, he has, this, as we say in the radio world, he has skins on the wall. So I would put you ahead of all.
So you've killed other postal male people?
I would put you ahead of all. You would be the head of all postal people.
Which, again, if
is that a good thing?
After 10 seconds of research, would make you the Postmaster General and Chief Executive Officer, or number two in command.
No, you're number one.
The Chief Postal Inspector. I just like the Chief Postal Inspector title better. Yeah. It sounds funnier.
No, I like the first one because it's longer.
I got something.
When somebody asked you, hey, what do you
What's
do?
That, Nick?
What do you tell them you do?
I'm the Postmaster General and Chief Executive Officer of the United States Postal Service.
I mean, that's a pretty legit
title.
So
you're a mailman.
Well, it's like my...
So what you're saying is you deliver mail, huh?
So
no, I tell other people.
There's nothing wrong with that, but you could have just said that.
No, I tell other people where to deliver mail.
In high school, my best friend got a part-time job cleaning out horse stalls.
Oh, my goodness.
And so people would be like, so what do you do? And he goes, I'm an equine waste reclamation engineer. And they go, so you shovel horse poop.
That's a poopy job, man.
Yep. All right, so obviously the mailman will deliver, but the Preds, they were unable to deliver last night for the first time all season on the road, could not get to 9-0 on the road. They lose 2-1 in the shootout to Anaheim as the Ducks win in the fourth round.
Yeah, a lot of quick notes here. 0-for-7 on the power play. That, you know, we were asked by Jackie Redmond, Nick, last week about, are we concerned about the special teams? We both were like, nope.
No.
Well, it cost them yesterday. And, of course, one of them was a phenomenal save from John Gibson on a Ryan Johansson attempt there that probably should have been a goal, but Kevin Fiala strikes early in the third period to tie it up, to get them that point, to get into overtime. So Kevin Fiala getting off the schneid there a little bit. That's a bit of a storyline. Oh, by the way, a Pontus Aberg sighting. So Pontus Aberg scores for Anaheim. Mm-hmm. Not sure any of us even knew he played for the Anaheim
Ducks. I did not.
And then, of course, 12 minutes of time in the second period where the Predators did not even have a shot on goal.
Mm-hmm.
So the offense, but that's what Anaheim does. Anaheim likes to slow the game down, and they came off a bad defeat, so they had a bad taste in their mouth after losing 5-1 to Minnesota. And then last but not least, of course, final note on the game, Victor Arvidsson placed on IR. So Anthony Boteto was a seventh defenseman who played a little bit of forward and defenseman. So that was interesting. But Victor Arvidsson placed on IR after missing a couple of games, came back and played once, now back on IR. So that's something to keep an eye on, certainly without their second leading scorer right now on offense.
Yeah, Fiala got his second goal of the year, his first in 10 games. Pekka stopped 29 out of 30 shots in regulation. And if we're looking at the Preds right now and there's one thing we want to see improve, it's certainly the power play. I mean, Anaheim was undisciplined. They put the Preds on the power play 7 times, and the Preds came up empty all 7 times.
That's like the red zone. You know, teams struggling in the red zone where they play well everywhere else, but when they have an opportunity to score, they struggle. We talked to Pete about it yesterday. Last game, they were 1-for-5 in a power play. Now they go 0-for-7. I think this is a situation where, and it's crazy because in hockey, you don't get, well, I guess they do get a moment to kind of rest for a few days and then come back. When is that? Beginning of January, where they get this long layoff?
Well, I don't know if they're doing that anymore.
You don't know if they're doing that? Okay. But usually they would get a couple of days off where you can kind of reevaluate yourself, self-scout yourself, and see what you can do better. But, you know, in hockey or basketball, that time is far and few between. So – how do you fix it? Well, you just hope that, you know, one day this, the switch just comes on during the season. And it's like anything, you know. You have a lull for a minute, and then you find yourself, you know, on a stretch where your power play is great, or your free throw shooting is great, or your red zone is great. You just got to find a way to keep it there. Because right now, that's the Achilles heel. That's the thing that would hurt them if they don't get it fixed entering into the playoffs.
They are currently at 12.1% on the power.